Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
There is a gift that God, that the great life has given each and every one of us that's too big to see. It's too big to see with our usual eyes, our usual mind. It's too big for our usual heart to hold it. And the only way in which it's possible for us to even begin realizing in a small way the size of this gift that we have been given in this life, each and every one of us, is to start understanding what it means to open up this mind of ours, to open up this heart of ours, so that when life comes along and presents to us the things that it does, such as what we're going to go into and through this evening, there's some virgin ground upon which those kinds of impressions can fall. And I can't stress strongly enough, especially during this evening that we're going to have together, how important it will be for you to continue to just let go and relax. Open yourself up. Welcome, if you will, what should be a kind of native silence that will be produced by the very ideas that I'm going to introduce you to. Because when the mind is properly quiet, when it is receptive to something that it recognizes and realizes as being greater than itself, meaning something that makes it come to a stop because it hears something. Have you ever walked outside and seen something so magnificent, by the way, like this evening's sky that went on for light years with great clouds against the mountains, and your mind naturally quiets down? And it does that because in the moment of such a relationship, the whole of yourself knows that there's nothing that you can add to what you're looking at. That the thing is quite whole and complete in itself, and that the surest, brightest way to enjoy what's there is for you to get the heck out of the way. Now, how many of you have trouble getting the heck out of the way? Raise your hands, everybody. So we'll get right through this because we are here to be honest about everything tonight. And that's going to require on all of our parts a continual awakening to what's taking place in us, and then seeing whether or not what the speaker says is so. Because the last introductory comment I'll make is that nothing that I'm going to talk to you about, nothing, isn't evidential. It may not be right there before you in terms of your experience today, but I promise you that as you listen to the ideas and the insights, if you'll receive them, you'll find as I'm speaking that there is a corresponding part in your own heart, in your own mind. I promise you, you'll find this because our experience is not this isolated, separate thing that we think it is, both in terms of our day-to-day relationships as well as in the content of our heart and minds and the way we meet things. We have much more in common than we know. So while you listen tonight, listen like that. Listen to see whether or not, if not directly evidential, does this not make sense to my intuition? So let's take a deep breath and we'll get started with our talk. How many here have something they know they must let go of? Let me see hands. Okay, I just make sure we're talking to the right group of people. Because actually, you know, it's funny. I'll say something like that and I'll look around and there'll be somebody like that. I don't. And of course, here's a person who really needs to let go. And let's say there isn't something that's, you know, right there in terms of this is what I've got to let go of. But we all have known, have we not? How many of us know at least that there's some weight that we're carrying around with us, some burden that we sense is not natural to us? So if I say that, is there everyone in agreement here? Yes. I asked, does someone have a weight that they're carrying around? And she looked at her husband, I think. What? That's not, and you'll see, by the way, that's not what we're talking about tonight. Let me start by saying, and then we'll prove over the course of our time together, that letting go is a quintessential act. It really is a fundamental, a basis of life. It's a principle without which a person understanding leaves that individual not with a full deck of cards. Now, how many of you know you don't have a full deck of cards? I want very much to get you to be not so falsely serious about yourselves. Anytime you see a human being who can't smile, you've met someone who has become so certain that their sense of self is so valid that they've become a victim of their own mind. They've lost the possibility of relaxing and letting go because they've held on so long to that sense of self that it's terrifying to even consider letting it go. And we're going to do better than that, not just in the atmosphere that we'll produce if we're all honest while we're sitting here, but with the ideas that we're going to look at. We're going to have a way in which it becomes possible for us to tap into this natural part of ourselves that is intended, that is actually created to let go. And I'm just going to throw one last idea into this part. There is no love without letting go. If you can't let go, you will never know what love is, ever. Some of us think that hanging on is what love is. But real love and letting go have a very distinct relationship, as we're going to see. And now we need to switch because we're on the subject. How many of you have thought to yourself, well, I did let go of someone that was troubling me? Raise your hands. Anybody ever let go of someone? But how many of you picked up someone just like that the day later? So it begs the question, what good is that? What I'm saying now is that letting go, the way we think of letting go, has nothing whatsoever to do with a simple switch in the way we think about things. Because you've ever thought to yourself, you know, I really want to be this kind of person, or I really want this kind of possession, or whatever it is. And then you really dedicate yourself to it. You go out and you achieve whatever it is that you thought was going to bring you freedom. And then within a day or a week or a year, you find that you didn't find the freedom that you set out to find, but rather you became the slave of the thing that you were going to be freed by. How many of you know that one? It happens with relationships. It happens with any kind of career path. All of the things in which we, by and large, are continually trying to find in ourselves and in the world ways that we're able to let go of those things that we say are holding us down. Do any of you remember when you were young? I can think of certain things in my own life when I was young that because of the society, the conditions, my culture, my environment, were painful to me. And it probably, of course, nowadays some of this wouldn't make any difference. But when I was a young man, your pants were supposed to touch the bottom of your pants were supposed to touch the top of your shoe. This is what was supposed to be. And if you happened to be a brother of an older brother who you wore his clothes, either they didn't touch the top of your shoe or you had to roll them up into cuffs, which was the end of the world. Yeah, you have your problems, I have mine. And then you grow up thinking to yourself that when I get to be a certain kind of man, a certain kind of woman, I'm not ever going to have that kind of humiliation. No one's ever going to put me in a place like that where I am seen as less than my fellow, you know, students, my cohorts. And a person then winds up, if we can look at what I'm saying, spending his or her life trying to figure out how to protect themselves from a condition connected to the past, where instead of learning to let go of that nature that believes its value was somehow dictated by the kind of clothes it wears, we wind up becoming slaves to a career so we can have slacks that reach the top of our shoes. How many of you see that? It's so important to look at these things because, you see, every day, every moment of our life has this evidence in it. Things that are pointing to us, ways in which we're actually missing the mark with the way we look at life. But because we don't know that the eyes within us that are looking at life belong to something that has an altogether wrong idea about what this life is for, we spend our lives serving that nature instead of learning to recognize it and let it go for being what it is, which is no longer necessary. So, take another deep breath, because now we're going to talk about something a little bit larger than all of this. Ever heard the expression, as above, so below? Everybody heard that expression? What a beautiful idea that is. Because it gives us a window into learning to understand some things about ourselves that is made possible by looking at the world at large, by looking at the celestial. I call it finding the celestial in the common, so that the everyday things that we are around and see, each and every one of them hold in them, by a process of mirroring, reflecting, that which is celestial, that which is good and beautiful and bright, as in the largest scale is presented to us in day-to-day things that we just don't see the celestial in. And part of our life requires us, if we're ever going to be truly free human beings, to begin recognizing where the celestial is the parent of the common. Because until we have that relationship as a living understanding inside of us, then all of our understanding is relegated continually to what this world has given us as our understanding. And if you want to know what isn't understanding, it is what this world has given you. Now, maybe that rubs you the wrong way, but the evidence is everywhere. So I want to make some connections in your mind. I want to show you some ideas so that bit by bit we'll put together a very beautiful picture. And in this picture that we're going to put together, in this picture is the power. The power is not in any one idea. The power is nothing that we're told to do. The power comes from our ability to see the truth. You know the truth, and the truth will set you free. You've heard that idea. Well, now it becomes a living idea. Because as we see the whole of something, as we see the fact of it as produced from above through the below, then we ourselves become a part of that understanding, because our seeing of it is our participation in it. And that's everything. Then we don't have to think to ourselves, who should I be? How should I behave? What should I? Have you ever been confused about exactly what you ought to let go of? Huh? You know, one day you're sure you ought to let go of him, her, this, that, or the other, and then no more do you let it go. Yeah, I was just kidding. I don't want to let go of that. I had the wrong letting one. So, we're going to, in a manner of speaking, leave this world for a moment. And by that, I mean we're going to talk about something that isn't much in most of our minds. Ideas that most of us don't think about much, but that maybe, God willing, the more we listen and work and want to understand what it means to participate in this broader goodness, this broader life, that perhaps that little by little we'll start to see and think of these things on a much more common basis than we do. So here's the idea that I want to start with for this. It isn't obvious to us, but it should be, that something in our universe, we're just going to start broad like that, something in our universe wants to become a sun, S-U-N. Something wants to become a sun. Now, I don't know if the right word is anthropomorphizing here, meaning lending human qualities to physical objects. But when I say it wants to become a sun, there is evidence that we now have in science and physics that proves that process of sun making is going all the time. Have you seen any of these pictures of the Eagle Claw Nebula, or any of these fantastic things that they're beginning to pull down from space with these telescopes? How many of you have seen something like that? If you haven't, you owe it to your heart and your eyes to see some of these things, because there are literally, and it boggles the mind. Remember I said there's a gift that's too great for us to see with our usual mind? Our usual mind can't even take in the physical evidence of the gift, let alone the giver of the gift behind that. But, back to the point, there are these nebula that are star nurseries. You know, like a chicken coop, you got chickens laying eggs? Well, out there, there's something so large, so vast, that it's measured in light years in its width and depth, and out of its cosmic womb, if you will, are coming stars. Don't you think that's fantastic? It's, I mean, the scale of it is so stupendous because we can see in that and through what limited understanding we have of the process physically, scientifically, that produces that, we can see that this process that's taking place is due to a certain kind of will. There is a certain kind of will. Now, you might say it's not will. You say it's gravity. Fine, I'll go along with that. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but something is pulling everything together. And not just pulling it together, but pulling certain stuff together to produce a certain effect by which and through which you and I get to be sitting here. So you ought to be thankful that there's something that wants to be a sun. That these marvelous elements that are being coalesced there in space, these gases as they whirl around are drawn and drawn and drawn until something happens, and at a certain point of pressure, the thing ignites, and suddenly helium's becoming hydrogen or whatever the cosmic stuff may be that's going on, and we bask in the light of it. Isn't it nice to walk out something 93 million miles away and it feels good? See, it seems like little stuff. But the fact is that there's a principle behind it. There's a principle behind that which wants to be a sun. And the expression of that principle is in the actual sun itself and what it does. Now, just as there is a principle, meaning a power, a will, an intelligence, and it is an intelligence. I read someplace that it's more likely a hurricane or a tornado could pass through a junkyard, and when it was done, from in its wake, there would be the Taj Mahal, than for you and I to be sitting here and talking about the things that we are. Now, the same principle that produces that sun, the sun. Similarly, there's other principles that produce dark, cold planets. Gravity, mass, certain kind of elements, which, I want to add this, certain kind of elements which are by themselves produced from the sun. Bet you didn't know you were going to get a little astronomical. You know, every element that is on this earth came from a sun that is a sun no more. Everyone. You can't find anywhere, anything, any element that wasn't made from a sun when it came to the end of its life. Because the sun, when that fabulous, beautiful orb begins to close in on itself, the element of hydrogen and helium, these things are crushed together, and as they're crushed together under tremendous forces, these forces begin to produce the elements that make up the universe. And when that thing explodes, it throws all of that mass out into all of those elements, all of that essence out into space, where little by little it floats around, and then under the force of gravity and other properties, it begins to coalesce. And then look at the person sitting next to you. A form is made. A form is made. And this is what we're talking about when we say that there are certain laws that produce not only these orbs of light, these beautiful, life-giving, radiant balls, but there is that which also coalesces and creates moons, cold, dark, and unliving places. Now, the point here is that neither the sun nor those dark worlds that are made by these forces, they don't have any choice as to what they're made into and what becomes of themselves. That's an important point. That the sun, there's nobody, no sun out there, meaning the thing that produces that, it doesn't go, I don't want to be a sun. Do you understand what I'm saying? Have you ever said, I don't want to be something? Raise your hand. So that's not part of it. It is a choiceless act that produces that sun. And it is a choiceless act on the part of the matter and the conditions that produce it when it's brought together by gravity and brought into a hard, cold, dark ball like the moon. Moon didn't have a choice, didn't say, I don't want to be the moon. These things were made without the choice of the elements that came together to produce them. We, on the other hand, have a choice about things. And now I want to bring us right back down to earth, so to speak, and point out, as I did a minute ago, that we, you and I, are the stuff of stars. We are the stuff of stars. But more than just the stuff of stars, in us lives that beautiful, divine intelligence, that will, that produced those things. So we have not only in us all of the elements that produced these possibilities, but also in us the possibility of being aware of the fact that we are ourselves the stuff of stars, that we have in us the stuff of the universe, that we're made of these things, but more significantly, we are made with a will and intelligence that was responsible for the formation of those things, which gives us the possibility as human beings, and only human beings, to choose, and I'll say it this way, what it is that we want to become. What it is that we want to express with our lives, through our lives, and in our lives. We as human beings alone have that choice. And what a choice it is. Because if we look at what I'm saying to you, and now I'll bring it further down, how many of you ever had the longing, especially when, and this is a problem that I'll get to, especially when you're younger, didn't you just feel like you wanted to ignite? Have you lost it? Do you remember when you had that feeling? When you there was a real fire in you. And I'm not talking about the fire of ambition. Ambition is what gets used by that fire, but you'll see what I'm talking about in a minute. I'll say it to you maybe in a different set of words. How many of you always wanted to be a star? Come on, now look, you can say, no, I didn't. But most of us don't care what stage we're starring on. We can go home and build the darkest stage in the world and say, ooh, and we're the star of our own show. It is inherent in human beings through a celestial impulse for us to work in this life, to try and be all that we can be. It is given to us. You won't find, unless they've been so abused, so punished, which happens, an individual who has lost that essential longing that was placed in them, and I want to straighten this out again, that was placed in them before they were born. That little bit of light that sits in the center of the soul, that sits in the center of that essence, and you can call it what you want to call it. I'm not troubled by words. What I'm interested in is seeing the whole of things as evidenced from our intuition, as evidenced from our ability to look at the world, and in some instances as evidenced from faith, if that applies to one. But the fact remains that here we are, and every one of us at some point along the way, we knew that there was something that we were meant to become. We knew it. And then because of the world that we're in, the way it's set up with its love of, and I'm going to use certain words and don't get caught up. In fact, take a deep breath. We better take a deep breath. The way the world is, that essential longing, it gets turned because also inside of us, there is a certain kind of nature that loves sensations. It prefers sensation over substance. It prefers appearance over being. And that nature that I'm talking about, that it sort of intercepts that longing. And we wind up as individuals who have a created inside of us a limitless longing to discover the truth of ourselves, and we find ourselves having this longing stolen, sublimated is the proper word. Because, and this is a key lesson now, what I call a key lesson in the talk, because we are, each and every one of us, taught by culture, by our conditioning, by our religious background, yes, that what we are meant to do is to become all that we can, meaning we're going to make, remember this, go out and make something of yourself. I remember that. Go make something of yourself. We're taught that we must make something of ourselves, but we're taught that the way to make something of ourselves is through imitation. I'm going to say it again because it's a critical idea. We are taught to go out into this world and make something of ourselves, but the part of us that doesn't understand, meaning that has been sublimated, caught, that doesn't understand, is that no one can make something real of themselves through imitation. It's impossible. But that's all we have. That's all the world that we live in offers us. Across the board. We look at people and we want to be like that person. We buy books on how to become successful like this individual achieved it. We wear clothes that will let us be the right kind of individual to make the best impression. Imitation, imitation, imitation. and nothing imminent. This is logical. I can see some of you, you look like you're in the dentist office right now. How can what is imitation be real? We were given the idea that in order to succeed at making ourselves into what we were given the original seed to do, that the path, because the world only has it, is for us to profess and become that which we have imagined we should be. And we can only imagine that which we imitate. No matter what it is that you think you've imagined, there's imitation in it, because all imagination comes from the past content of one's own thoughts and feelings. So we're clever. This mind, very clever. It reconfigures all of these elements in order to come up with an image that once it's clear in our mind, then we begin to feel like, ah, now I'm becoming something. And then we'll give our whole life in the pursuit of imitation. Now I'm leading to tell you, and I hope you're leaning to hear it, what's wrong with us? Why is there this unhappiness? Why is there stress? Do you know phonies are always afraid? I'm going to give you a minute to think about it. Phonies are afraid. Of course they're afraid. They're not real. Why aren't they real? Because they have adapted an imitation life. They've agreed to become something that they were told by their parents and their parents before them, that if you become that which I have shown you or that which exists, and by the way, this is also a big one, I didn't make it, but you will. You can be a bigger phony than I was.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit guyfinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
And so a man, a woman spends their life in the pursuit, and this is what I'm trying to get together in your mind, this idea, in the pursuit of that which is always limited. Imitation is limitation. Imitation is limitation. How many of you can see that idea a little bit? Imitation, of course imitation is limitation. By the very fact that I'm imitating an image, an idea, a person, not only am I not that which I'm imitating, but I'm only imitating the idea I have of that person or condition. So I'm definitely limited by whatever it is that I'm trying to imitate. So here is this amazing congruence of powers inside of us where on one hand, we're seated with this idea that we're meant to be limitless, to express and find the truth of ourselves, which is limitless. On the other hand, it's been sublimated into something that all the time is trying to find itself through limitation. Can you see? No. Do you see why we're nuts? No, really, can you see? You want to know what's wrong with the planet? It's like lighting, it's like tying a rocket to the ground and lighting it. Isn't that it? Don't you feel like that sometimes? Like, I want to go, but I can't. Why can't I? It's him. Yes, it's her, it's this, it's that, it's them, it's what happened to me 25 years ago. You fill in the blanks. And the point is that nothing that we fill in, nothing that we put in those blank spaces as to why we can't ignite, why we can't have the life that is not born of imitation, but born of creation, as we're meant to, has nothing to do with the conditions we're in, but the way in which we presently understand ourselves and our place in this world, our life, and what it's for. And that's what we're examining here. Figuring out, well, I'm trying to satisfy this limitless longing through what is clearly imitation, therefore limited. That's all I know to do. And that's the beauty of it. This is a fantastic thing when you really start to see it. All we have to choose from is that which we have been given to choose from according to our culture and conditioning. That's all we have to choose from. But there's a little something inside of us that one day starts to say, you know what? These choices aren't enough. This just doesn't work for me. Because I've been A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and gotten all the way to Z. And then you know what I did? I just went back to A again. You ever done that? Think to yourself, I'm letting go of everything. And then you do nothing. You figure out how to... And this is part of that mind. It figures out how to regenerate and reconfigure what didn't work the last time into something that'll work this time. And you know what? We have to go through that. We do. If for no other reason than at some point, we're finally a little bit receptive. Because most of us aren't. Most of us aren't really teachable. Because we're so sure that the sense of ourself that we derive from our ideas about ourselves and our ideas about all things, by the way, any idea that we live from is a prison. Any idea that we live from is a prison. Any idea. God, truth, Christ, these aren't ideas. Those are words fashioned around beautiful and powerful principles by which a person is able to possess not the thing that he imagines, but the sense of himself as being someone in relationship with that idea. And there's a big difference between having the actual life of that which we profess versus being the object of our own imagination. Huge difference. Now, what we're interested in, hopefully, is beginning to recognize some of the truth of this and then figuring out, well, what does it mean to us? And the proof that these possessions, whatever we'll call them, and the self that prizes them, I want to put this in. How many of you understand this idea? That this possession that I have, whatever it may be, an idea about myself, a career, a beautiful car, a home, that this possession that I have is very intimately tied to the sense of self that I have. How many of you understand that? That there is a definite relationship between what I'm identified with, and that the more that I believe that if I could get this, that, or the other, the more I believed I would achieve the contentment and the peace that I was searching for. So we go out and we do these things. We worked to make ourselves successful. And so that you understand this, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with becoming a successful human being. What I'm saying is that we need to see that there's something terribly wrong with believing that that which is our success can be the same as the source of our suffering. Who does that make sense to? That which is the source of my freedom, I'm a slave to. That can't make sense to anyone who actually sees the fact of something. But this is our condition, because in the moment when we're free, the slave's not around, and everything's this great. And then life comes along and it unmakes what we've made. Ever have life unmake you momentarily? You know, bam, like that. And in the moment where that world that you have so struggled to put together receives that slam, who is it that turns into a puddle of jelly? You. You. So the possessions, the powers, the people, the things that we've set out to achieve in order to bring ourselves that feeling like, well, I finally answered this call. I answered this longing to make something of myself. When those things come undone, and they do, evidence proves, now listen, important point. Evidence proves that in that moment, when life unmakes us, it's not a problem really for most of us, because we'll just make ourselves into a black hole. Do you understand that? How many of you know when life delivers the blow and unmakes your life, that the first thing you do is make a mud pie of yourself?
Raise your hands. Don't, you can't sit. You can sit here and say, oh, no, no. You have to, all you do, you start feeling sorry for yourself. You start blaming people. You start getting angry. You have fear sets in. And so, by the way, I was laughing when I was thinking through these notes. This is the, one of the greatest definition of stress, the celestial definition of stress, is this. It's when a human being goes from being a supernova to a black hole in 10 minutes. Can you not see it? Yeah. Zippity-doo-dah, you know, things are going great, and my star is rising, I'm becoming all that I'm meant to be, and then the world turns left, and all of a sudden, instead of a supernova, I'm a black hole. Negative, angry at the world, just plain unpleasant. Just plain unpleasant to be around. And by the way, I don't know if you notice this, we don't even want to be around ourselves when that's going on. And can you imagine? Here's a person, this is so funny. I don't want to be around myself, but I think others do. Haven't you noticed that? When you're negative, by and large, unless you're really angry and you know you're going to explode, you'll go find somebody. Like you say, it's a blessing, here I come. And they know you're a black hole. And you know what? And they don't want to get sucked in. But you know what happens to us? We make the wrong move. Because when we're in the gravity, now listen, when we're in the gravity of an individual who himself or herself has been drawn into this constrictive force, this dark world. Remember we talked about these two principles, this beautiful, expansive sun life and this dark world, that when that person comes around us, they set off in us that which they are. And then we will sit and we will either judge or we will sell our soul to that person so that they don't go supernova on us from the black hole state. How many of you know what that's like? You go, I don't really want to talk to this person, but if I don't, they won't talk to me when I'm a black hole. So here's the point. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. There is a part of us that doesn't care what it does to us. There is a part of us that doesn't care what it does to us, and it doesn't care what it does to others, and it doesn't care what it does to the planet. Only the problem is that when we're in the grip of that part, we think that something apart from us has made us like that, and therefore we must blame, resolve, change, fight, struggle with that condition that is the source of the conflict, when the fact is that what's causing us to be like that is something living in us undiscovered as of yet. Oh, what a great day it is when a person stops blaming everyone and anything for what they are in the moment. But because we don't understand the principle of the sun, the principle of this living light, because we don't understand it, when the darkness comes, we think the only answer to the darkness is to resist it or to find something to blame it on. But once we recognize and begin to, as we're going to do before this talk is out, that inside of us lives this principle of light, this beautiful, true, ennobling principle, then we can understand, now wait a minute, I've done the self-loathing bit. I've run self-pity to the end. I've been having fights with people in my mind for 78 years and I still haven't won. I've mastered the expression that lets people know how intelligent I am. And they still don't get it. And when we see that these things don't work, we also begin to see at the same point that fighting doesn't work. Fighting with the moment in which life brings this unmaking of what we have made of ourselves, it doesn't work. How do we know it doesn't work? Because I was walking on the river today, and the Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. How many Humpties are there in here? Raise your hands. You're all Humpties. You may not want to admit it, but you're Humpties. But Humpty thinks he puts himself back together again.
And by the way, the king's horses and the king's men is an esoteric idea that has to do with emotions and thoughts. Horses always represented emotions, and the king's men always had to do with certain intellectual capacity, meaning I'm going to use my emotions and my thinking just merely to do what? Think of something else for me to become, because what I made of myself, it got blown apart. Fell off the wall, shattered. So the solution is pick up the pieces. Haven't you heard that? Pick up the pieces, man. You can't make peace in your heart by those kind of pieces. It doesn't come that way. So as this gets clear, that the suffering routine doesn't work, fight doesn't work, and surely flight doesn't work. How many of you have ever tried to outrun your trouble? I mean, come on. Running doesn't work. But there's a fourth solution. There's a fourth solution. And it's the solution that we've been working up to tonight. And this fourth solution is essentially unthinkable, which is why we have to talk about it in the way that we do, so that we can start to understand what's required of us if we're really going to learn what it means to let go, if we're going to learn what it means to let go and let God, if we're going to learn what it means to let go and let God awaken in us this light that doesn't have the problems that we do. You may choose the words. I'm simply trying to put a picture in your mind by which you can understand some of these principles. Here's the unthinkable fourth solution. We simply stop trying to change the conditions or the people that we see it being at the cause of our conflict, and we do the only thing, the one thing that we have the power to do. And here's the one thing that we have the power to do. We have the power, now listen, to do the inner work of changing ourselves by letting ourselves go. Period. The one thing that we have the real power to do. We have the power to let go of ourselves. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of you would say, okay, I like that. I want to let go of myself. That's what I've been trying to do. Yeah, I've been trying to let go of myself, just what you're talking about. But you see, there is letting go like we talked about, which really isn't letting go. And then there is letting go. Letting go by beginning to recognize what we've been talking about. And what is it that we're talking about? That there's something inside of me every moment in which life comes along and unmakes me, unmakes my life. He says this, she does that. I don't get the approval. The business goes bust. The health gets the alert. I mean, you fill in the blank. And in the moment when that takes place, there is an unmaking that has happened. And what we have to let go of is the self that appears in that moment that wants to remake itself again in its own image. That's letting go. Has nothing to do with anyone else. Has nothing to do with possessions. Has nothing to do with places, people. But everything to do with the recognition that, I'll ask you, what is it that most of us spend our lives trying to avoid? Those moments in which suddenly all that we've put together gets knocked down. Where everything that we've vested ourselves in to give our lives meaning suddenly shows to us that that which we said was the penultimate of meaning, or at least the quintessential, the highest thing, it didn't have it in it. And how do we know it didn't have it in it? Because it got blown apart. So you have to ask yourself, what kind of life do I want? What do I really want? I mean, if there's anything life says all day long, it says, what do you want, man? Do you want a life by in which you continue to make yourself? Or would you like make yourself only to be unmade? Let's get that point. And then when unmade, do what? Make yourself again. Doesn't that get tiring? Anybody tired of making themselves yet? Man, what a weight. Gosh. Just all the thinking alone. Look, do you know what your mind is doing when you're not there with it? I'm telling you. Making stuff. That's what it's doing. It's trying to fix what happened. It's trying to plan so that never happens again.
It's working, 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 trying to do what? Trying to hold Humpty together. And it doesn't work. What does work is to recognize that we're not on this planet to be in a conspiracy with parts of ourselves that are forever perpetuating themselves through imitation. Through ideas about the meaning of life. We don't need an idea about the meaning of life. We can be living it while I'm speaking. And if we're not, we're missing it. Why? Because every moment is God's life. Every moment is the life of this beautiful intelligence that put everything together the way it is. By the way, with all of these things that we're talking about in plain sight for those of us who gradually begin to be able to see this larger world. There it is. It's all there. And have you ever had that experience where you see something that's true, and when you see it, you go, man, why? It took 40, 50, 60 years to see that when it was there all this time? Yes. Why? Because we couldn't see. Why couldn't we see? Because this mind was giving us what it wanted us to see. And what it wanted us to see is what it requires us to do so that the sense of self inherent in it can go on. So in the moment that we're talking about, when life delivers this blow and there's this unmaking, at that split second, something else has to take place in us, and that is that we realize. Now, here's the key idea. We let go of the self that wants to keep making itself in its own image. We let it go. Why? Because we have begun to understand that there is a greater life that is already making everything that we need possible. We see it. We can look at it and see, and for instance, you take the sun that we were talking about. In the creation of this beautiful entity of light that a sun is, isn't it so that the very existence of the sun, the radiation of it, the warmth, that everything about it has to do with a continual process in that sun of its own unmaking? Do you understand that? We experience the sun unmaking itself. But the unmaking is also part of its life. So is ours. Our real life is as much in the unmaking as in the making of it. Only the difference is that when the unmaking moments come, and let's the unmaking moments are the aching moments, aren't they? The unmaking moments are the aching moments. She doesn't love me. He said this. Nothing's going to work out. I didn't become whatever it is. And I mean, we can run a list as long as the universe of the ways in which those thoughts and feelings and sometimes events, conditions actually come along, and there's a sharp blow to us. But our path has always been, in the moment of that unmaking, to think to ourselves that unless we make something of ourselves again, that we shall be lost. And I'm saying that we are lost when we make something of ourselves in such moments. Because the only thing we can turn to in such moments through which to make something of ourselves is the self that just fell apart. How many of you would go to a mechanic who repeatedly gave you a car that broke down before you reached the end of the driveway? Will you get it? That's where we are. Only we don't see it. And now we're beginning to. Now we can start to look and understand this. And that there is all the time something inside of us that says that this moment that has unmade us is the same as the end of us. And now we can see, I hope that you've been able to start seeing, that what we have called the end of what we have made ourselves is not the end of what we are given to be. Look, how many of you agree? I'm terrified of the end of anything. Unless I've said I want that to end. But if I haven't said I want that to end, nothing should end. Does that sound reasonable to anybody here? That's our path. Nothing ends. And by the way, when it does end, it still doesn't end in my mind because I carry on the anger of the thing that shouldn't have ended. Listen, let it end. let it end. The end that you fear is not the end. That moment where that worry, that fear, that anxiety, that negative state comes in, which, by the way, oh, I hope you've understood this. What's the point of that negative state other than to create that gravity in which the self that was pulled apart suddenly starts to pull itself back together in the name of that darkness? Do you see that? That when we get negative, we are simply redefining ourselves by some other quality. And who wants to be defined by a negative state? Only that principle that gives rise to it. And that's not our path. So in the moment when these things come, and now I'll get down to something, I always try to make a practical exercise. I always try to give everyone that I talk to something by which we can begin to actually work at this moment of allowing this unmaking to take place. So that in the unmaking, we don't come to the end of ourselves, but we stand, and listen to this, how beautiful it is. We stand every instant that that's taking place, and it's never not happening. Did you know that? Did you know that we are never not being unmade? Never not. There isn't a moment in which, in this beautiful scheme of this tremendous life, in the image of God, that we are made, which has to do with the whole of the universe and everything working through it. Never not being unmade. There's never a moment in which you're walking down the street, even walking down the street. Have you ever walked down the street and thought somebody should look at you and say, you know, you look good, and they didn't do it? Did you not feel the unmaking in that moment? Have you ever gotten upset with someone because they didn't realize how good you looked? You know what I'm talking about. All right, maybe you don't look so good. Point being this, we must learn to recognize, realize, and release those moments in which we find ourselves struggling with what has unmade us. Recognize, realize, and release. What is recognition? Here's how one recognizes the moment in which this unmaking has taken place. You're getting negative. Life has come, it's unmade. It's taken away that precious image that we have of ourselves where we've imitated someone or something and we think everyone should notice, but they don't. And suddenly we start to get angry or stressed, worried, frightened. A negative state seeps in. The first thing is to be awake at the moment in which that tension starts. In that instance, we recognize the moment for what it is. And what is the moment that's taking place? Something inside of me does not want the unmaking. Something inside of me doesn't want what just happened to have happened. And in that moment, we use what we're talking about. We realize, you know, this that recognizes that moment of unmaking, I realize that what I must not do is make myself again. I mustn't go into thought about why that happened and who did what and where to go to fix it and all of the things that our minds get caught up in. And instead of that moment in which we get trapped trying to recreate ourselves, we release ourselves. We release ourselves. Now, here's the rub. When we release ourselves, the experience at the moment of really letting go of ourselves is the sense of total loss. Because, you see, if I don't fix it, if I don't straighten him out, if I don't tell her, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose everything. And I beg of you to ask yourself, lose what? The opportunity to make yourself again in your own image so that you can face the exact same thing tomorrow, which you will. Because the same intelligence that created this marvelous, beautiful ideas that I'm talking to you about, also, I don't know if you've noticed this, this life, you don't get away. The lessons come back. Don't they? You say, well, not me. Bam! They come back and they come back and they come back. Why? Because that same beautiful intelligence, God's life, wants you to recognize, I'm not trying to undo you, I'm trying to make you new. I'm trying to give you something, man. I'm not trying to take something from you when I take what you said was yours and critical to your life. Now, how can we know that this is true? How is it possible? And this is where a person has to reach within themselves to understand a most precious idea. And we've been talking about it the whole evening. The end of one world is the beginning of another. The end of one world is the beginning of another. You can't find an example anywhere in the universe where that principle isn't held true. It's everywhere, except in the mind of the human being who is convinced through his conditioning and being spiritually asleep as a result that the only thing worthwhile in life is the life that he or she has constructed for himself, even though it's hell to live it. Let it go. Catch those moments in which, and it happens all the time, things just don't go the way you want them to go. See, look, you know, doesn't this make sense to you? I hope it does. Can you think of anything in this beautiful creation that isn't using everything that it's given all the time? Is there anything that's not in a constant flux of life fulfilling itself through that flux? Is there anything? And then there is one thing, you and I. We have the moment of unmaking, and in that moment, we make ourselves. But we don't make ourselves something real. We just revisit what we were, put it back together, and come up with another one to be. We can be the kind of human beings who live and die daily, moment to moment, actually participating not in an intellectual exercise, but actually being the very thing that we're talking about. So that in being it, we're freed by it. So that in being it, we are freed by it. And the reason we're freed by it is because there's nothing that lingers. We don't carry stuff over. We're not a captive of our past or the captive of our own future. Instead, we are living in a real life. And a real life whose very purpose is the fulfillment of our own if we will let go of what we've been making of ourselves so that something good and true can be made of what we were given at the start.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.